Crocodile Rock, one of the choices of the guest at the moment on the Dave Charles Show, Nikki Bowles, a song that, well, you know, each of us has a kind of repertoire that means stuff throughout our lives, and certainly I think Elton John and Crocodile Rock takes us back to, what, the 70s?
That's right, yes. Yeah. That song certainly gets people out of their chairs. And
you still play? You played in Rockhaven, which is the name of the band that I didn't mention up front. I should have, yeah. But you know, it's a thing we're going to get into in a second. But I want to find out how, from a schoolgirl and a budding musician, your life progressed from there. So you left Fatima, and what did you do from there?
Well, I did go to university and studied music, which was probably not very wise, because who studies music at that time? But I had a rather nice mother who let me follow my heart, and so I studied music.
And you say it's not wise. I think it's very wise.
It's wise now. I do believe in the modern robotic age, musicians, especially performing ones, will be more interesting than AI-driven yeah. songs and AI-driven bands.
But I find it's an interesting observation that because I too went to university and I studied drama, but the music students were in the same building, so I had a lot of music student friends. And they were many of them were extraordinary musicians, but in the formal sense, they could not play unless they had the notes in front of them. You know, they couldn't just get up and play us a song, you know. Mm. Is that a challenge for you?
I prefer to work by ear. I'm a bit lazy about reading the music. I can read the music.
Was it a challenge then to actually learn to read music because you could already pretty much play?
Well, I did have music lessons. I had piano lessons. And I'm glad that I had piano lessons, because that's the hardest instrument. It's very easy to jump off the piano and go into a bass or a guitar. So consequently, I got to play many, many instruments. So that was very useful in my life as a teacher and as a performer.
And clearly you understand the mechanics behind what makes a song work. But getting back to this dichotomy, really, of those that play music without being able to read the dots, and those that play music strictly by the dots, and then in between you have someone like yourself who can do both, which is very rare. I was quite interested to read, because I didn't know this, but Johnny Clegg couldn't read a note, mm-hmm. for example. You know, and I think quite a few of the big names in musical history were similarly, and I say challenged, because if you can't read and write music and you've got to try and create songs that people can perform with you, you need to take it somewhere to get it formalized, and that's a bit of a trick. But for you, it's not a problem. You can transpose. If a song is written in a certain key and it's too high for the vocals or whatever, you can drop it down and raise it up. I think that having a formal musical training is an absolute gift. It's a language a lot of people don't understand. It's an absolute language, and being able to read it, does that make you appreciate what you're listening to more?
I so appreciate people who can read music properly. I have a colleague who would go onto a stage and sight read a concerto with a violinist, just sight read the whole thing, which I'm afraid I couldn't do. It would take me 50 hours of practice to get halfway there, so I can't do that. I can read the music, but not fast. But I see what you're saying about the formal training. There are many ways of approaching it. When I was a teacher of music, I would get a whole class of 13-year-olds and put a keyboard at each desk and teach them the three chords of rock, C, F, and G. And within 3 weeks, they were playing rock and roll and writing their own songs, just through knowing a couple of chords without knowing how to read music. So you can approach it as a chord, from the chord approach, which means you can earn an awful lot. In fact, you can learn enough, unless you want to play classical music, which means you should start young and learn to read the notes from very young, because it's a steep learning curve and very good for the IQ. Do you know that people who study music, their IQ improves, especially when they study it at the age of 4, like the Suzuki violinists do?
Yeah.
In fact, we've done studies of a school, a very interesting school, which was a very unsuccessful school in New Zealand. And we did a proper study on the school. And at the age of 13, they introduced compulsory music to all the students. And suddenly, the school changed completely. There were less dropouts. They were succeeding in maths. They were succeeding in science, which they'd never done before. So they made it 2 years compulsory. And the total IQ of the school went up. The success of the school went up. The people who didn't play rugby didn't feel like dropouts, because they were musicians. which is equally cool.
You know, what you say is joyful to my ears, because, and I see a lot of modern schools have taken that approach, the cultural aspect, which was always not very important when I was at school. If you played first team sport, whoa, you were the bomb. But if you were more of a musician or heaven forbid, a dancer or an actor. Oh, no, that wasn't cool. But I'm music, absolutely, I think it does unlock phenomenal potential in the brain. Mm-hmm. It certainly keeps, apparently, it keeps the brain young, and it keeps people from becoming a little bit atrophied in the early onset dementia and stuff. Apparently, if you play, that can keep you going for an awfully long time. But let's get back.
I certainly hope that's right.
So you studied music and you qualified,
yes,
as a B
B B minus honors. Yes.
Okay, and then from there, what did you do?
Well, I worked as a courseware writer, which was a fascinating job. You got to create courseware for a simulator to teach somebody how to, for example, drive a Roycut, which was quite interesting. And then I went overseas.
You wrote programs to teach people how to do technical
things. We started
things.
In DOS, which I hate to say how old I am, but we started in DOS. And I didn't really know DOS, but I got the
this is a computer language for those of you that still don't know.
So that was a fascinating job.
And your family was very involved in working. I know your brother created a program that became a game changer in the world with private property.
Yes, that's right.
He was private property, and still very much is. And so the computer age came about, and you were at the cutting edge and the forefront. Music and computing must be, there are similarities, are there not?
It was quite funny, actually. I could type really fast. So when I went to the company and said, look, I'm looking for a job, they thought I was good at computers because I was moving around the keyboard very fast. So I managed to con some of the people some of the time. And I think that's part of the reason why I got that job.
And there you were, early programming and creating manuals and things like that using computer programming to teach people to drive Roycut.
All sorts of things. Use a great gantry crane, those kind of things.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was very fascinating. And it was a very big company with highly qualified people and me, who was not qualified in that field at all.
But you faked it until you made it.
It was
fun. You bust your way through, which is fantastic. And then where to from there?
Well, we went to New Zealand for 16 years and had so much fun there. But I did go back to music. Taught in many schools.
When you say we went to New Zealand, was this
my
as
husband.
A family? Oh, so in along the way, you met the man of your dreams.
That's correct. Yes.
How did that come about? Let's take a segue, because I want to find out a little bit more about you on the other side. That Nikki Bowles has selected as songs that mean something in her life and hopefully yours too. My very special guest, Nikki Bowles, a musician extraordinaire, an artist, a resident of the greater Ballito area, golf champion of Simbiti, and a thoroughly nice, wonderful friend. Nikki, we're getting now into your personal life. You graduated and you worked in a very exciting profession, early computing, and then you met someone. How did that happen?
Strange enough, it was just at a birthday party. My husband's brother had a big house, and he was having a huge party as a housewarming and a birthday party, and there was this very interesting man dressed in a suit, which I don't think he's worn since then, Basil Bowles. And we hit it off from there. It was a week before his 30th birthday.
Okay.
So he had to invite me out on his 30th birthday because I didn't know it was, and that's the only night I had free.
Wow. and it was it an instant attraction, or did it become a friendship that blossomed into something more?
I was attracted to his character and his charismatic person. And his sense of humor.
He's a very interesting guy. I've seen him work a room like no one I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he walks in and in a very short while, everyone knows who he is, because
that's
he's
correct.
Been around to him completely naturally. He's not forced or anything like that.
Well, he worked me too, I have to say. I just wanted to mention that song that you played earlier, the Black Keys song, it's from my second band called The Wednesdays. Three gorgeous young men and myself have formed this band called The Wednesdays. Wade Davis was the instigator. And we're getting going. We've only played twice so far. And we're starting out. And it's It's so much fun. It's a completely different repertoire.
Okay, well, we'll come on to that one shortly, but let's go a little bit further. So you met Basil, you eventually got married, and then you emigrated. You went to New Zealand.
Went to New Zealand.
Why?
1994, my brother-in-law got shot dead, and it was the year of the elections, and we were worried about the future for our children. So we decided to emigrate, and then we got back in 2010.
Why did you come back?
Because it's a lovely place.
Oh.
Look, I love New Zealand. I can't fault it. It's a beautiful place. People are friendly. Everything works there. It's amazing. Your taxes go to the right places. There's no bribery. There's no corruption. In fact, the Prime Minister nearly got stood down because they accepted a bottle of wine from somebody. Mm. So your taxes work there. Because it's a lovely country and friendly, so there's no big problems. So it's got its own set of problems. It's a little bit too woke for me, and it's got small things become big problems there. South Africans are wonderful. I love us. I love our sense of humor. I love that I can meet a complete random stranger in the street and say, I like your shoes, and they'll say, oh, thank you so much. And I can even tell somebody in the shops that I don't like what they're trying on. I mean, how cheeky are we as South Africans? Yeah. And you know what? They never get upset. They always just say, oh, really? What do you think of this one? So I love us. I think we are a fabulous nation.
I love us too, and I'm glad that you came back. So there it is. You had a life in New Zealand, successful, came back because you wanted to come back to South Africa, and settled where?
We're in Sambiti and Balito. I've been there
come
ever since.
You back straight to Balito, to Sambiti, and here's where you stay.
I have a smart husband. That's what he chose.
well done, Basil. Now, an interesting segue, and it's very personal, I understand, but I think of huge importance. I don't know whether you remember or know the actor, musician, celebrity presenter, Ian von Memmerty. He was the man that, with Strictly Come Dancing, was the host of Strictly Come Dancing on television in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And he does a handful of keys and played on many cruise ships and did many, many shows. Well known. He's 61 years old, and he has decided that he doesn't want to get older. And he doesn't, because he isn't good with money. He's never been good with money. He hasn't made provision for his dotage. And he has decided that he is not going to be a burden. He's going to go to a place where they will allow you to say goodbye on your own terms. He calls it self-deliverance. Many would call it euthanasia. Many would call it suicide. I don't know. But it does get one wondering and thinking about the fact that maybe not in his case, when a man is, or a person is hale and hearty, to take a decision as drastic as that. But certainly if you are facing a terminal prognosis where there is no hope of recovery and your life is going to become more and more undignified, painful, horrific, generally speaking, and the medical fraternity will keep you going because of the protocols and ethics, way beyond where you should be allowed to go. Now, your dad, bless him, was the first case in South Africa that was given the go-ahead to end his suffering. He was in a coma for many years. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, because my father was so outspoken and a brilliant speech maker, and he was a member of parliament, so he was often quoted in the newspaper, and he was unpopular at the time because he used to be very outspoken about euthanasia.
Outspoken against or pro?
Pro. And I'm pro as well. He used to say, if a member of my family had a terminal illness, I would help them out and I would terminate them. And you couldn't say it then. That was in 1991. It was a terrible thing to say. People were like shocked. Mm. I don't think, it wasn't that they disagreed. It's just that it was very outspoken. So because we had those speeches in the newspaper and on record, that gave us strength to fight a case when he was put in an impossible situation. He had a war injury. He had pain. He had a problem, and he was in a coma for 4 years, and there was no hope of recovery. And my mother said, this is impossible. I know what he feels. I know what he wants. We cannot allow this to continue. So for 4 years, she fought against the government, a legal case, and eventually she won the case. And he was very healthy in his body, but there was nothing happening. Oh. So they were able to terminate his life. And it's historic. They still study it now. In fact, it was even mentioned in the New York Times, linked with Nelson Mandela, when they thought that he was being kept artificially alive. Mm. I don't know if it was true or not, but they mentioned my father's case as a comparison. It's just, it's interesting that it's so historic.
It's a very interesting subject, and hopefully we'll be able to unpack it a little bit more, but not on this occasion, because we don't want to go into too much of the ethical challenges that it presents without being fully versed with the facts and the options and the legality, etc. But a very interesting case nonetheless. Moving back into a happier realm, if I dare.
Yes.
So now you're settled in Bolito and happily ensconced in Sibiti. Sibiti's brand new at that stage, pretty much. And it's developed a lot. You've been involved in the development. And along the way, you have found the time to start performing music, and happily so. And I think it's a magnificent thing, because, let's face it, music brings joy and it kind of transcends the problems that one might have. To play music is an absolute gift. To listen to music being well played is an absolute gift. And I've noticed where you guys perform, you tend to have a very dedicated and passionate following that gets up and boogies. And these are not kids. Your core audience for Rockhaven tends to be, I would imagine, on the far side of 30, maybe 40, and having an absolute blast. And this is fun.
Well, while it's good, we'll just continue doing it, right?
Okay.
I'm one of those people that find it very hard to sit down when I hear good music too. And I think that's what our audience feels. They're people like me who just enjoy dancing to music. And when do you go and dance? Especially at our age, you don't go and dance anyway.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of freedom that you can get out there and let your hair down, and nobody will report you as being odd. You can just let your hair down and dance and have a bit of fun.
Absolutely. Don't they say dance like no one is watching?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in most of the environments in which you play, everyone's watching, but everyone's having fun, yeah. Which is fantastic. No. What are some of the, give me a moment of one of the best moments of you. What are the best achievements of your life?
You're talking about music?
Anything.
Well, I think I've had a few photographs that you keep in your memory, which are there forever. And one, strange enough, is I have a friend, Jean Robert, who got me into cycling. And I really appreciate that, because going down Fields Hill in the middle of doing the Amashova at 75 kilometers an hour with nobody in front of me on a bicycle is one of those photographs that I'll never forget. I'll never do it again, probably, but it's just an amazing thing to have done.
Wow.
So
you also had quite a bad bike accident, if I remember.
I did, but I'm still here, and that's a good thing at this age.
Absolutely. Keep on going. So you've done the cycling joy, you've had the musical joy, you've had good, I think your family is, you and Basil seem to be very happy in your lifestyle on the North Coast, and I think that's an absolute blessing, you know, but to have a happy relationship and a secure environment, I think it's absolutely wonderful.
A happy relationship is quite something to achieve when you're older, to still have that happy relationship.
It's extraordinarily hard.
Really meaningful relationship with someone.
Yeah, it's a gift. It's a blessing. Now, you mentioned you've formed a new band.
I'm actually in three bands. The Rockhaven is my passion. I love Rockhaven. It's fun. It's funny. We argue all the time. But we get on so well. And the Wednesdays, as I said, is a new band. So much fun. Some of the songs I don't know. I had never heard of the Springbok Nude Girls band before.
Oh, with Arno Costens.
Yes. So we do the Pixies and we do Matchbox 20 and the Cranberries. I get to sing Zombie,
okay.
Which is quite a challenge. And I'm very flattered that they even let me sing Zombie. But wow. There I go. So it is so much fun to do that kind of different genre of music. And as I say, they're three gorgeous young men and myself.
And where do you play? Where do you perform?
We have only performed a couple of times. We performed at Bretton Wood and we performed at Caribou. So we're looking for more gigs.
So it's brand new and exciting. It's
newish.
A four-piece. And yeah. What sort of style of music do you specialize in? Is it dance or is it listening or is it a bit of a combination?
Oh, I think it's going to be dance because a lot of our songs are upbeat and upmarket, and but a different audience, which is very appealing to me as well.
Okay, and here's a tune that I know that you love. Key Bowles, my special guest on a Tuesday morning. Chris Stapleton there with Justin Timberlake, Tennessee Whiskey.
Gorgeous song.
Yeah, those harmonies are so good. 20 minutes to 12 o'clock. Kind of wrapping things up a little bit now, Nikki. We've discussed quite a your life has been. We've glossed over, I'm sure, many of the issues that we could discuss, but time is always against us. If you had to live over again and knowing what you know now, what changes would you have made in your life's path, if any?
It's a very interesting question. I've thought about it often because I did want to be a vet once, but where would you like to end up right now? And I don't know if I'd like to end up anywhere different right now. If I was a famous person living in a mansion in Hollywood, never visiting the neighbors because they live 10 miles away, I don't think I'd enjoy that. I wanted that when I was 10. I wanted that when I was 20. Right now, I think I wouldn't change very much.
And, well, that's an extraordinary blessing, is a word I've been using a lot through this interview, but I think it's like that. A lot of folk have regrets. Yeah, regrets. I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. You don't have any.
I would have worked harder. I would have looked after my health better. But I'm very happy to
work. Doing just great at the moment. Still hailing and exhaling, which is fantastic. Looking forward, what are some of your hopes for the future?
I would like to continue doing what I'm doing for a while. I think and I hope that the creative people will have a place in the future. And I'm starting to think that they really will. So if your child wants to do music right now at university, just say go for it. And social media, I think that the bloggers have still got a future, even though they are now being copied by robotics, which look just like them. So it's very difficult to tell which is which. But I'm positive. I think that we've just got to keep hoping that humans are going to be the things that we search out, and the things that we look for, and the things that we go and watch in the future.
And of course, you're going to continue to play the instruments that you played and continue to sing and perform to your heart's content for, well, as long as you're still able to hold a note.
For sure.
Hopefully I can see myself
in the retirement village still plonking on the piano somewhere in the background there.
Hey, maybe we can get together sometime.
Let's do it.
My very special guest, Nikki Bowles. We have played together in the past. I've just been a bit of a flop of late, but maybe in the future there's still an opportunity for us to come back. But in the meantime, two very established bands, Rockhaven. Wherever you see Rockhaven advertised, I would strongly recommend that you pop along to enjoy the fun that is. And then the new band, Wednesdays.
The Wednesdays, yes.
Look out for that. They'll definitely be making a splash. And hopefully when you need some publicity, you'll come and tell us what's happening and where. And
thank you very much. We certainly will.
And thank you so much for joining me on a Tuesday for a lovely chat. I've enjoyed it very much. We're going to play out with one of your favorite songs.
Please. Oh, gosh.